Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment.
This is the Earthquake and Pillar Shake and leader of the Meat Pop Express, Big Trouble, Ben Bishop, the man who stands at 6'12" and weighs in at 15% of a metric ton, and the guy with the shades because the sun never sets on a cool guy, and you're listening to the MGB Podcast.
Today we have a very special guest, the Earthquake and Pillar Shaking leader of the Meat Pop Express, Ben Bishop. How you doing there, Ben?
I'm doing great. Mason, great job getting it all right. Let me tell you how many times that podcast hosts have gotten it way wrong, has messed it up, but you got the whole intro right. Kudos to you. Great work. I'm doing great. Can't complain. And if I complain, I don't think anybody would really care to listen. But hey, you know what? I'm enjoying life, enjoying professional wrestling. Really excited to be here on this podcast and heard you got some hard-hitting questions. So I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, we're super excited about this. I don't think we actually mentioned the backstory. I know I told you the story. I asked Mason, I was like, who would you like to interview in 2022? And his first answer was Roman Reigns. And I said, I think that's going to be a little bit difficult. I'm still working on Roman. He's playing hardball right now. But the second answer he gave me was you. And I was like, perfect. Because you were actually on my list as well. Because we kind of compare notes a little bit. And I was like, okay. I got plenty of questions I want to ask Ben as well. So this will be perfect. So,
I'll take number two to Roman Reigns any day.
In fact, we've got so many questions. Jackson's even joined us today. So, Jackson, we know you're going to go shower in a little bit. So we said we'd let you go first. So go ahead. You ask your question to Ben.
All right. What
is your favorite meal to have for breakfast?
My favorite meal to have for breakfast. I like how we're starting with non-wrestling questions. Seriously. Sincerely, I like that. My favorite meal to have for breakfast. So, It's a difficult answer because I, you know, being a wrestler, you know, you got to eat certain healthy things. And, you know, so what I usually eat for breakfast will be just probably eggs, a multigrain English muffin, maybe an avocado. But my favorite breakfast, you really can't beat just a big hearty breakfast sandwich. And that's on an everything bagel. With you know, an egg, whether it be bacon, sausage, or ham, it doesn't matter. One, or maybe all three. You know, if you're feeling feisty, and bacon, egg, and cheese on an everything. But I'd say that's my number one favorite breakfast food. But I can't eat it often, unfortunately. I wish I could. I wish I could eat it every day.
Now, I got a follow-up question then, because we know that we saw you at Voltage Wrestling in Pennsylvania, I forget, probably a month, 2 months ago, and you were facing Savage Gentleman, and we know that Savage Gentleman likes for breakfast, well, we know he likes pancakes, but he also likes eggs with peanut butter, so, ever tried that? We know that you like the wrestlers, you got to have your special diets and anything. Eggs and peanut butter, have you done a Savage Gentleman challenge?
I like to think of myself as pretty adventurous when it comes to food. But Victor is extremely adventurous when it comes to food, especially with the peanut butter. I have done what I've been doing recently just to get more protein is tuna on eggs. So that if that's a little weird, but peanut butter. No, I'm not gonna go with the peanut butter on the eggs. He can have that gimmick.
We figured it was more a Victor thing than a wrestler thing, but we do like to keep asking just to make sure.
Great first question.
Yeah, we'll give him a free choice. He can say whatever he wants.
I was thinking he's gonna ask who's your favorite wrestler, but I was like, oh, okay, something different.
We never know with JJ. He used to always want to ask at least one question, and then he kind of stopped doing it. But when he was around four, it could be anything. It could be what's your favorite wrestler, what's your favorite store to go to. One of the more strange ones was, do you like the smell of trash? You never quite know what you're getting from him, but that's why we love it when he asks. I was excited when he asked a question. I was like, I can't wait to hear what this is going to be.
We normally ask what sports you played in school, but I know you played college basketball. Can you tell us a little about your sporting background and when did you change to becoming a wrestler?
Yeah, so growing up, actually, I started basketball in the sixth grade. Before that, I was really into actually karate, so I was doing that for a while. I was one belt away from black belt when I quit, and I kind of kicking myself for that nowadays after watching Cobra Kai and how cool I think karate's great. So, but I had basketball. I wanted to kind of put a lot of my time and efforts into that, especially on days on weekends. So, I started playing basketball in sixth grade. Just, you know, I had God-given height, and it would obviously with basketball that helps. So played it for, you know, all through college. I went to prep school, Worcester Academy in Worcester, Massachusetts. From there, obviously went to University of Vermont and played 4 years. You know, just being tall, being a big guy, it came natural to me. You know, I was naturally had good hands around the basket. Nowadays, my position in basketball doesn't really exist. There's not many guys like me that were like me anymore. I call myself the last of a dying breed in basketball. It's true back to the basket post players. Now all the big guys got to shoot threes. So, and I never did, but I loved every, you know, minute of it, even though at times, you know, it was tough, as any sport will be. But I wouldn't trade it for anything. If I had to do it all over again, I wouldn't say in a heartbeat. It'd probably take a few heartbeats to say yes. And thinking about all the two-a-days and all the trainings and the early mornings and the late nights on the bus. But, you know, now I'm kind of back to that kind of lifestyle. Yeah, you know, played basketball 2013. I finished. And then when I moved down to Baltimore, I actually picked up Australian rules football. So I played Aussie rules football for about 2.5 years, 3 years with a team down here in Baltimore, first with the Baltimore Washington Eagles and then the Baltimore Dockers. We traveled a bunch. It wasn't a pro league or anything. It was mostly like semi-pro kind of, but it was a lot of fun, just able to kind of scratch that competition itch that I had. It allowed me to do that. So great group of guys, played that for a few years. And eventually, you know, I was like, you know, this is kind of a little too hard on the body. You know, I'm a big guy, all this stuff. And then, you know, a couple months later, I started training and wrestling, and everyone kind of looked at me like, what do you mean? You know, like, oh, you want to stop because your body hurts and you're going to go wrestle. But I've always had a passion for wrestling. It's always been my number one passion. I was approached at an independent wrestling show, at an ACW show, Adrenaline Championship Wrestling, by James Ellsworth. I'm actually first by Gilbert, who walked me over to James Ellsworth, I should say. Approached by Gilbert, he's like, are you a worker? And I said, well, I have a job, yeah. And he goes, no, are you a wrestler? I said, no, I'm just here for the show. I was just trying to stand in the back, because a lot of times I go to indie shows, a lot of people will just look at me because and think I'm somebody, but I'm just Ben. So I walked in the back and I was just standing there, and he came up to me. I talked to Ellsworth. He's like, let me get your number. All this stuff, talked to him the rest of the night. And what do you know? The next day I started training. So in the rest is history. And that was in 2019. So it's been an easier, I don't want to say easy transition. I've been watching it my whole life. I've always watched wrestling, so I kind of understood it. Obviously, I had a lot to learn. I still have a lot to learn. But just kind of understanding wrestling a little bit by watching it, being a fan my whole life, and also just being an athlete, a lot of stuff came easier to me than I see it comes to other people when they become wrestlers.
I can't wait to see how Mason's going to follow his notes now, because you've already answered a couple of his next questions. I like it when he has to think on his feet a little bit. The Baltimore Dockers, I actually follow on Facebook. It's something I've been meaning to try and do. And then, of course, with COVID, it was just kind of difficult to do, and I haven't quite got around to it. But yeah, I used to watch Australian rules football when I was in high school. Even though it was the opposite side of the world from England, it was something that kind of, caught my interest. It's just a little different from rugby, and that was, that was kind of interesting. I heard you mention Worcester as well. Of course, that's where Beyond Wrestling is right now as well, so I immediately thought of that connection.
Yeah.
And before I ask Ben a question, I don't have it on here. I want to ask you a question first, Mason. So you're in eighth grade right now, okay? How tall are you?
Approximately. 5'3", 5'4".
Okay. I thought you were a little taller than that, but that's probably about right. You're a little taller than your mom now, so I think you might be about 5'5". And Ben, do you know how tall you were in sixth grade?
In sixth grade, 6 feet tall.
That's what I kind of figured. Like, obviously now you're 6'12" or 7 foot, however you want to list
just
it.
Just under 7 foot at 6'12", yep.
Uh-huh. So I was kind of curious. I was like, I wonder how tall Ben was in sixth grade. So I was like, I'm going to wait, but I'm gonna make sure I ask you what your height is in eighth grade
first. I think my tallest friend is 6'3".
In eighth grade?
Yeah.
That's tall. I was 6'5". 6'5" in eighth grade.
That's still middle school.
Oh yeah, I know. Yeah, that was it.
Well, I was thinking when you said you went to the wrestling, like you wanted to stand at the back because you didn't want people to think like you were a wrestler and you were going to get involved in the matches or something like that. My first thought would be, I would want to sit behind you in a wrestling match because, like, there's no way you're going to see anything. That's kind of that stereotype of the image. Like when you go to a cinema, you normally have the seating that's kind of staged so you can see over the top of people. But often at wrestling events, it's just the flat seating pretty much. Yeah. Well, the chairs are set out. If someone sat behind you, they're done.
Oh, exactly. And I've been there, and I know how much of a nuisance it can be. So I try to sit towards the back of any show I go to.
Could you dunk in eighth grade?
Yes. Were you close? Yes, I could. No, I could. Yeah. I dunked for the first time, I believe, in seventh grade. In eighth grade, I was able to do it seamlessly. Yeah. Never in a game in eighth grade. I didn't end up getting to it in a game, but I was able to have a first dunk in eighth grade. That was a pretty surreal feeling, actually, remembering that now. It was really cool.
That's got to be cool in seventh grade. There can't have been anyone else in your school that could have dunked at that.
Oh, even close. No. There was
yeah,
no.
That's what I was figuring. Like, they're reaching up and swashing, getting the bottom of the net, swishing the bottom of the net.
One athletic guys that could like graze the rim with like the just in their best effort, you know, from like a 20-foot run up or something. That was big. But yeah, no, the dunk for the first time, it was cool.
How did you get your wrestling name and nickname?
Yeah, so my wrestling name, my name is Ben, so that's first and foremost. that is my shoot name as well. Bishop, just because it sounded cool. There was no real reason for it. And then Big Trouble actually is one of my favorite movies, Big Trouble in Little China. I am a big fan of John Carpenter movies, big fan of the 80s style type movie. I already mentioned I love Cobra Kai. Obviously, it came out now, but I was always a big fan of The Karate Kid as well. And I think Johnny Lawrence is the true Karate Kid. But I really loved that character. One day I was at training and I was really, struggling for a month or so trying to come up with a character, trying to come up with my wrestling persona. And a wrestler by the name of Vic Ramon, who was wrestling in this area a lot. He's not wrestling right now, but he used to for a while. Me and him were just going back and forth and trying to figure out exactly what to do. And we actually started a conversation about Big Trouble in Little China and about John Carpenter movies. And he said, why don't you just be Big Trouble? And I was like, because people were wanting me to be certain things and say certain things or be like a big brooding monster type of character. I was hearing like Viking. I was hearing like a giant Gonzalez type character. Mason, I'm not sure if you know who that is, but you do. Okay, great. You're a historian. So something like that, like a Tarzan, Viking, that type of thing. People were like saying to me, and I was like, that just doesn't fit me. I don't want to be like, and all obviously, Kane and Undertaker were two of the best characters of all time. They were able to do that dark, brooding character as a big guy. I just didn't want to do that. It wouldn't have come natural to me. My favorite wrestler of all time is Kevin Nash. So I always loved how Kevin Nash carried himself as a big guy with that like cool confidence that he had. And I kind of wanted to have that as well, but not also, be able to have that quirky side. So I really based a lot of my character off of the main character in Big Trouble in Little China, Jack Burton, and kind of have that 80s, 90s aesthetic to my character where kind of like the lovable jerk in a way, someone that is confident enough but doesn't take themselves too serious.
What is it like wrestling with James Ellsworth because he was your trainer?
Yeah, so me and James, we've worked a lot in matches. One thing that not a lot of people know is how brilliant he is when it comes to professional wrestling. And he needed to be that brilliant when it came to professional wrestling, or he wouldn't have made it to where he made it. This isn't something that people don't know, but obviously he's not the biggest guy. He's not in the best shape. He's not the best looking guy. So he needed all the intangibles to kind of get to that level, and which he has when he had that match with somebody like when he wrestled Braun Strowman on Monday Night Raw. He was able to get over with the crowd just based on his facial expressions, based on his mannerisms, little things he said. He came up with that line, "Any man with two hands has a fighting chance," and it caught on. What he told me is what happened was Vince was at the gorilla position, and he turned to somebody and said he cuts a better promo than over half our roster right now. And he, luckily, you know, Vince, obviously very invested in Braun Strowman, was watching the match, and he saw Ellsworth, and within 6 weeks later, he was signed. People were telling him backstage and saying to him, Vince is really into you. I think Vince is going to sign you. And he thought they was just a big rib. He thought everybody was messing with him. But, you know, he has such a wealth of knowledge in wrestling. He was trained by Axel Rotten. Rest in peace, Axel Rotten. You know, he was another guy that was known for his expertise on wrestling psychology. So riding the roads with him, that's where I learned the most. You know, he can tell me any day how to do a move. But again, in wrestling, that's not the most important thing. The most important thing is how, if you're going to tell a story, being in the ring and knowing the psychology and how to put a match together. And he is so good at that. And even he's a small guy, he understands how a big guy should be portrayed in a professional wrestling environment.
Yeah, when I started getting Mason into wrestling, because I watched wrestling when I was a kid, and then I kind of stopped watching it because they stopped showing it in England, and I didn't have cable, so I couldn't watch WWE. And then when I moved to the States to begin with, I started getting back into WWE, and then I kind of dropped out again, and then I kind of got back in again. I saw some videos with CM Punk, Daniel Bryan, I was about to say Bryan Danielson, I guess it's Daniel Bryan at that time, The Shield, and I was like, oh my gosh, these guys look really cool. So I started to watch it, and I was like, I think he's about the right age now. We started watching, and that's probably around that same time. It was when Ellsworth was fighting people like AJ Styles. We had a tall wrestler like you as well, who we loved at the time, Big Cass and Enzo. Kind of fits that same thing. Like, he can talk on the mic. It's not all about the wrestling. If you can tell that story and you can get the crowd's attention, then it makes a big difference. So,
Enzo's a perfect example of that, where, you know, he technically, wrestling-wise, he's not at the level of a Bryan Danielson, Daniel Bryan. He's not at the level of even guys like Chad Gable. You know, he's not at that level technically, wrestling wise, but he got so over because he could talk and he had a character and he had a personality, which goes a lot longer way in professional wrestling and sports.
Now, we talked about Adrenaline Championship Wrestling. I did look. They got some upcoming matches. Now, on the poster, it does actually say that you're 7 foot. Now, we've always heard you introduced as 6'12". I know we kind of talked about that earlier. So, which is it? It's kind of a short question.
I don't know who's making those posters. I made sure on my Facebook to put an asterisk and put 6'12" on there. I don't want any. I don't want to be any false advertising. You know, I am 6'12", not 7 foot. Just a tad under 7 foot at 6'12".
There you go. James just being a heel, then put in 7 foot. That's
it. He's trying to kill my gimmick, so that makes sense, him being a heel.
Now, I saw in February, they're actually going to appear at Hagerstown. Adrenaline goes kind of all over Maryland from what I've seen. They're going to appear in Hagerstown. We have been to a couple of events in Hagerstown. I saw the Boogeyman is on the card, which I was like, oh, that kind of caught my eye straight away. It is on a Friday evening, which is kind of difficult to get to. I haven't seen a poster, though, so I don't know if you can say, are you actually on that card for that one?
I am. I will be on that card, yes. I will be on the February 4th card.
So might be one. Yeah. Fridays are always difficult. You know, obviously, you know the area. Like 95 is just a hot mess on Fridays. And any time of traveling on 70, 270, our whole place is a whole mess. But we'll try and do that. Now, I did actually look. I was reading through the comments. Somebody's like, oh, Boogeyman must be like in his late 50s right now. And I looked at the picture and I was like, no, there's no way. 57 years old, the Boogeyman, and he's in fantastic shape.
Oh, he is in unbelievable shape. He doesn't look any different. He doesn't. He is a spectacle to see in person. I will say that. Just the whole getup, the whole Boogeyman character. It is very much worth to meet and see him in person.
There's a few names that kind of get attention when they appear on a poster. And when I saw Boogeyman, that was definitely one that did. Now, it got me thinking, though, if he's wrestling still at 57, have you kind of got any future plans? Have you kind of got, like, that cutoff point when you're like, all right, I want to wrestle for the next X number of years? How long does Ben Bishop want to be a wrestler for?
Yeah. I've told myself, and I've been honest with myself, you know, once my body says no more, that's when I'm gonna stop. I'm not a small guy. I'm a big guy. I've had a lot of injuries in basketball. You know, 4 knee surgeries. I've had herniated discs, ankles, hips, everything kind of under the sun. I'm not definitely not a spring chicken. You know, being 31 years old, going on 32 this March. I keep myself in good shape. I go to the gym every single day. So I'm not lagging behind in that department, but I always have said, you know, and my wife says it as well, you know, listen to your body, you know, listen to it. It's not going to be where I don't want to be walking around at 50 years old in any way, like crippled or, you know, can't move or walking with a limp. I don't want to be that person. So at any point, you know, the athleticism starts to wane or the body just says, hey, you can't do this anymore. That's when I'll probably hang it up, and I'll definitely be in tune with that, and be honest with myself. But right now I feel great. You know, I actually feel the best I've felt in a very long time. I feel better at 31 than I did at 23 and 24. So I'll take it.
Now, I actually heard Rhett Titus make a quote. He wrestles down in UEW in Richmond, obviously Ring of Honor as well. And I saw him make some quote that a lot of wrestlers were kind of retweeting, that if you want to be successful in wrestling, you can't take more than 10 days off a year. So you're telling me you take 0 days off a year. Is that what you're telling me?
Really, when it comes down to it, there's very few weeks where I'm taking days off from some type of working out, whether it be wrestling training, whether it be in the gym, whether it be cardio. I'm always trying to do something, and especially again, 31 years old, you know, I need to do that. You know, I don't have the metabolism of a 19, 20 year old anymore, sure, where I can just eat anything and, you know, be fine. I need to make sure I'm keeping up, and it just become part of a routine. You know, there have been days where I've gone 2 days in a row without working out, and I feel sluggish, groggy. It's almost, you ever seen the Snickers commercial where, you know, if they don't eat the Snickers, they turn into a diva? I kind of do. I turn very grouchy. I turn into a diva. I feel uncomfortable. So I almost need it. I just need something. I need to do something. Need to move. And it just become part. It's become part of my repertoire. Every day, you know, I need to. So and even some days, you know, I don't want to go to the gym. There's been plenty of days like that where I'll sit in my car for 20 minutes when I get in the gym parking lot and try to find something to put it off. But eventually, you know, hey, I'm here. I got to go. I got to get in there. And I got to get to work and get something in. So, yeah, no, I bought what Rhett says. Yeah, I believe that. You know, you got to keep working, and you got to stay in good shape, cardio wise, aesthetically wise.
Now, Mason and I always do our research separately, and then we kind of come together, and then I'll try and look at things that I know he's probably not going to look at as well. So one of the things I was watching while I was watching YouTube is something I've heard multiple people talk about, and for some reason, I've never quite gotten around to watching it. So I'm hoping you can tell us a little bit more. I'm talking about Grimm's Toy Story. So
people mention
it. The matches I've seen, like I saw your debut. It was a handicap match, a 2-on-1 handicap match. It was very entertaining, really. I saw you become the legendary champion. I also saw you defend against fellow Voltage wrestler Max Morrison as well, who we interviewed probably a year or two ago as well. So, yeah, probably Mason, are you even familiar with Grimm's Toy Story? And I kind of kept it away from you. When you were 10 years old, I was like, no, that's definitely not suitable for you. Now you're 14, this might be something that's a little more. Tell us a little bit about Grimm's Toy Story and tell us about your involvement. And I don't actually know if you still wrestle there at all. I just saw a few.
I haven't in a while, but a lot of people. So I'll start with this. Grimm's Toy Show started as action figures. Yeah, oh, no, it's okay.
Grimm's Toy Story sounds good. Toy Story.
Grimm's Toy Show.
I know it was GTS.
Yeah, you got GTS. There you go. It started as him. I don't know if you know too much of a history of it, but he got really popular by playing with action figures, really. You know, he would make up these storylines with his action figures, and he, you know, had all these funny names for his, and I'm not going to say them all because a little,
we're a PG podcast.
Yeah, it's PG, maybe PG-13. I've got a little R with some of the things he would say, but, he had his wrestler, he had his action figures, and got a big following. I mean, he has over 2 million subscribers on all of his YouTube. All of his YouTube accounts. He has three different ones. But the Grimm's Toy Show, he started the GTS Wrestling. And through the years, a lot of people have come through GTS Wrestling. A lot of people on TV right now have come through GTS Wrestling, whether it be Priscilla Kelly, whether it be MJF, Max Caster, Bear Bronson. A lot of people have wrestled at Grimm's, and it gets a bad rep because a lot of people see it as backyard wrestling. It is wrestling in a backyard, but it doesn't mean it's backyard wrestling. A lot of guys have come through Grimm's that have been trained, guys and girls. And it's such a great place, and it really, and I can't say enough good things about Grimm, and about some of the individuals that he has there, some of the wrestlers. It really helped me hone in on my character because it's very character based at Grimm's, and he's trying to reach an audience that will get into the characters. Yes, the wrestling is not as technical as other places. You're not going to see PWG type matches at Grimm's. You're not going to see work rate type matches at Grimm's Toy Show or Ring of Honor type matches there. You're not going to see that. But what you're going to see is an entertaining character. Grimm himself is extremely entertaining, and he is really the star of the show, obviously. And people buy into it. And a lot of the individuals that were on Grimm's, he really hit a height in about like 2017-18 was when really things picked up for Grimm. And that's when he got a lot more followers and a lot more people interested. And a lot of the individuals on those shows, you know, they have a pseudo celebrity status because of it. And I'll go to shows now and I'll have kids come up to me and say, "Hey, I saw you on GTS. When are you going back to GTS?" And Ellsworth, same thing. When he's at shows now, a lot of people remember him from GTS other than WWE. It has a big following. He gets a ton of views. It was up. He was getting, you know, close to 2 million views at one point per video. I really can't say enough good things. I haven't gone back since last summer in 2021. Last time I was there was I wrestled Violence, and it was June of 2021. I haven't been back since, not because, you know, I don't want to go back and I have a sour taste. That's not the case whatsoever. Just timing. He films a lot on weekdays work-wise. I can't get there. He used to do more weekends. Now he's doing more weekdays, but he's got something special there. I hope he keeps up with it. And himself, Grimm, he's a great guy. And I really have enjoyed getting to know him and working for him.
I guess I'd heard of the name, but I hadn't seen any. But once I started watching one, then I started watching another, and then another, and then another. That was the appeal. It's not the same as Ring of Honor. It's not the same as AEW. It offers something completely different, and that was part of the appeal of it. It was fun to watch, and it's the number one thing for wrestling. If it's not fun and it's not entertaining, then I'm not watching. And it certainly was both of those two things.
It's all I get. Wrestling needs to be entertaining. It needs to keep people watching. And I, you know, I have all the respect in the world for pure wrestlers and technical wrestlers. At the end of the day, that's not all people want. They like that, but they want compelling characters. They want compelling storylines. They want matches that make sense with good psychology. They might not tell you they want that, but subconsciously, that's what people want. And that's what's going to keep them watching week in and week out.
I read you got to share a locker room with Shane Douglas and Ricky Morton. What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, invaluable is the first word that comes to mind. both incredible human beings, better people than our wrestlers, if you can believe that, because obviously they're two of the best. Shane, you know, is always open to really talk to anybody. Anybody can go up to him. He's open, warm. He will talk to you about your match. He will give you pointers. He will give you feedback. Ricky is the same way. Whenever Ricky's in a locker room, he says hi to everybody. He doesn't act like he's above anybody. He doesn't change a different room than other people. He's with all the boys in the locker room. And he's been really cool to get to know. I've been on a few shows now with Ricky. And just an encyclopedia of wrestling knowledge. He always has one or two really good stories to tell as well. It'll make you laugh because he's a hell of a storyteller. And I'm looking forward to getting to know Ricky more. I am moving to Atlanta. He is there often. And we did speak about, you know, linking up once I move down to Atlanta. So I hope to be on more shows with Ricky. Him and Ellsworth have a great relationship as well. So getting to know him has been really a highlight of my career so far.
Yeah, I was looking through. We did our notes for this over winter break because obviously we had the time to do that while we went to work. And I just before we came on air, I kind of just looked quickly back to see if there was anything that was relevant to add in for this. And that was the last thing I saw. I was working, obviously, Twitter's, it's got the most recent stuff first. And then I saw that on January 1st. And it was like, yeah, Ben's moving to Atlanta. So I was like, oh, heck. I was like, we definitely need to find a few more events then before you move down. It's less than that's 2 months away now. So, yeah.
End of March, we're looking. Me and my wife will be moving down there. And, yeah, you know, I'll be back. I'll be back for a good amount of shows. I'm going to try to continue working for ACW at least. But, yeah, no, we are excited, and it should be fun.
Yeah, like I saw in one of, I know it was a post that was split into several things, but that opportunity to network, to work for other organizations, to obviously put your name out there, that's obviously important for a wrestler.
It definitely is. Absolutely.
We saw you at Voltage Wrestling's first show in Pennsylvania, and the roof was very low. How else have you had to adapt and change your style of wrestling?
It happens more often than you think. It happened at ACW recently where the lights were a little bit low, so... It happens at another ACW venue, Beefalo Bob's in Glen Burnie. And it's tough, but Ellsworth told me, when I said to him, I'm like, you know, this roof is, this place is too low. And he goes, that's not an excuse. Like, you need to figure out what you can do. Like, that's how you become a better worker. That's how you become a better wrestler, is you got to figure out, what are your limitations? You know, you might go into a match and a guy has a bad shoulder and you got to figure it out how to work around that. Like, now you got to work around not being able to do certain things that would get you over with a crowd, you know, bigger power moves, you know, big body slams, power bombs. You can't do it here. So you got to figure out something else or do something else. I worked around it. And when I got to that Waynesboro venue, I looked at the ceiling, I got in the ring, and I was mad. Because, you know, I really wanted to, I was really looking forward to that match with Victor. And, you know, we were going to do some pretty cool stuff. And now, you know, we told a good story, and we did what we could in the match. And, you know, my at one point when I did a step over, it was so low, my head went into the tile. what are you going to do? I take it as a positive. I always try to be as optimistic as I can. I take it as a positive as I've learned to do different things and adapt to my environment. Because in wrestling, you have to. And not just the environment, you have to adapt to crowds. Every crowd's going to be different in different areas. A Maryland crowd is much different than a Tennessee crowd. A Florida crowd is much different than a New Jersey crowd. So you got to understand that you got to adapt to your environment when you're a pro wrestler.
I think you probably already answered this, but did you know ahead of time that it was going to be as low as that? Had you been to that venue before?
I found out on the way to the show. I was actually driving James Storm to the show, and I was in the car with him, and I got a message from one of the other wrestlers on the show, and he said, you're going to have to duck when you get in the ring. I was like, what? And he goes, there's a really low ceiling. And I was kind of upset, you know, I was just like, you got to be kidding me, like, you know, because I was really, believe me, I was really looking forward to this match. But we had to figure something. We had to figure something out. I told myself, hey, you know, don't be a diva. You know, I was thinking to myself, you know, I don't even want. I might not even be at work this show. I might just turn around. Obviously couldn't turn around because I had the name in the car with me, so I had to get him to the show. So I was going regardless. So I'm like, no, you know, figure it out. You know, man up and make it work.
I'll talk about it more in a second, but the next match I actually saw of you, I was just switching on IWTV, and I was watching the Invictus Pro, and the difference between the height of the ceiling from Waynesboro to Invictus, that was a huge venue. I was like, oh my gosh, talk about one extreme to another. But yeah, you have to do what you can do.
Absolutely.
What was your experience like wrestling in AEW?
Really, really cool experience. I fortunately had a really good experience. I got to work with Bear Bronson, one of the nicest people that I've met in professional wrestling. Actually, before I was, you know, because I was down there for a week. So I was down there for two tapings of Dark, two tapings of Dynamite. This was prior to Rampage. So I was there from, I believe it was Saturday to Saturday. Or yeah, something like that. I don't know what days it was, but I was there for two. I was there for two Dynamites. That was the Dynamites I was there for was the Jungle Boy Kenny Omega title match was one of the ones I was there for. It was a hell of a match. But regardless, you know, it was really cool to be down there the day of when I was going to work Dark, because how it works is, you know, they invite the extras down there. Some people are there for a week. Some people are only there for one set of tapings. I was there for two. So the first set of Dark was filmed the day before Dynamite. So on a Tuesday, I was there and I didn't see my name on the board. So I'm like, okay, so I'm not working a match tonight. There were 14 matches that day. Then Dynamite happened and they filmed Dark Elevation before Dynamite. So there's about five or six matches on Dark Elevation that they'll film. Or tape, and I wasn't on the board then. So now I'm like, okay, so now I've been down here for about 3-4 days and I haven't wrestled yet. I've been there, you know, I've been in the back, I haven't had the opportunity to wrestle. So the next Dark comes up, which it was that Dynamite was actually on a Saturday. So the next Dynamite comes up, and the next Dark comes up, and I get a message from Bear Bronson. He goes, hey man, we're working tonight, looking forward to it. So that was really cool, you know, to get a message from him. So it kind of put me at ease a little bit, knowing who I'm working, knowing I'm going to have a match. Got to the venue, spoke with him. We went over our match. He's a, like I said, one of the nicest people I've met in professional wrestling. He, you know, let me do some stuff in the match. He didn't, you know, obviously with some of those Dark matches, you know how they go. But he allowed me to get some stuff in, and he said to me, you know, like, hey, you know, I want you to look strong, because if I win, it's gonna make me look stronger if I'm not, I don't want it to squash somebody. So it was good. Our coach was Billy Gunn, so I got a lot of good experience. Speaking to Billy Gunn, and he is one of the largest human beings you'll see in person. Very sneaky, very, very big guy. So he, you know, gave me some pointers after the match. Got to meet Tony Khan. That was cool. Spoke with him for a little bit. And, you know, he said he really enjoyed the match as well. I will give you guys the inside scoop. I will be back at AEW next week for Dynamite and Rampage. I'm sure I'll have a Dark match when this comes out, which will be the 24th. So the Monday, that I might be on that night. I might be on that night. So who knows? I don't know. I don't know if I'll have a match. Sometimes you go there and you don't have a match, but I'm pretty sure I will. So you guys get the inside scoop first to hear about it. So if you're anyone listening right now on the 24th, you could be seeing me either before or after. I don't know when you guys are going to find me. So.
Oh, we'll be retweeting the heck out of that, because I'm sure that you'll be mentioning it as well on Twitter, so we'll keep an eye out for that. Now, I said at the start, like, we always tell our guests, look, if there's anything that we can't ask about, or if we ask something and you don't feel comfortable, don't ask it. And that was kind of the one that I wanted to make the opportunity of. Like, being back at AEW, with it being the newer company within, like, sort of the last 2 years, that was kind of the thing that I wanted to know. Like, I wanted to know, like, did you get to meet Tony Khan? Did you get to go backstage? Like, did you get to talk to some of those wrestlers? So that was kind of the thing. That was more than I want to know. The match itself, I actually rewatched it tonight. I remember watching it originally, but I was like, I want to watch it again just so I can see. And it was. The thing that surprised me the most was a lot of those matches are generally kind of squash matches. But yeah, you got your moves in for this one. Now, he did suplex you about four times, which I'm sure must be pretty unique for you in a match. That doesn't normally happen. Bear Bronson's a big guy. But no, it was. It was. You definitely got to showcase your talents. And I agree exactly with what you've said. And I've heard people say this before. Like, if you have those matches, if you beat a weak opponent, that doesn't do anything for you. But if you have that person who's strong the whole time and then you beat the strong person, that makes you look even better as well. So it works for both wrestlers.
Exactly. And you know, he's obviously trained by one of the best schools, Creative Pro, trained by Pat Buck, Brian Myers, and everything, you know, in the match, you know, was great. I really enjoyed it. He was very complimentary afterward as well and said he really enjoyed it. It was actually his first singles win in AEW was against me. So I'll always, that'll always be in the record book that he beat me in his first singles match or his first win in a singles match. Yeah, it was against me. So
now I've just realized, Mason, I'm being really dumb right now. I'm all excited about this. And then I've suddenly realized Mason's birthday is next week at the time of recording. We have tickets for AEW Dynamite. And I haven't bought tickets for Rampage yet, but I'm going to wait a little closer to the time, see if we can get some bargain seats. So I was totally forgetting that AEW is actually in this area right now. So that kind of... yeah, that kind of makes sense. But that was one of the appeals of wanting to go as well. Like, which indie wrestlers do we know who are suddenly going to appear on possibly either of those two shows? So, yeah. I hadn't even put two and two together. I'm like, oh, great, Ben's going to be on AEW. That'll be really cool. Not even thinking. We might actually be there live, and we might actually be able to take some pictures.
I'm interested to see who – I don't know who else will be there. I have no idea. So I'm interested to see who the local – talent will be from Virginia, Maryland, you know, West Virginia. So we'll see. I know a couple of MCW guys were on Elevation that was recently in Newark. Action Andretti, Pat Buck, saw that they were on that. So I don't know if they'll be back for the DC one. I'm not sure. When they send us the email out, they don't put names on there. They just send it. They CC everyone. So it'll be a surprise. I'm sure I'll see a few buddies there, and I'm looking forward to it.
And obviously, cards subject to change. And when we saw the one in Norfolk as well recently, there was a lot of people we recognized from like VCW and people who wrestled in Northern Virginia. So, yeah, I think it'll be really cool. Now, one of the things I couldn't tell when we were watching your match today is, and we always see this when we watch it on the TV, and we haven't been to an AEW show since the very first one, which was actually in DC. We went to the first one. Like, we can't miss the first one. This is too big of an occasion.
Yeah.
And it was really all the stars are in that match. This is before AEW Dark. This is before Elevation. So watching those shows now, I'm kind of curious, because obviously you get introduced, but when we watch it on TV, what we see is we see the star, as it were, coming into the ring, and then we see the other wrestler who's already stood
already in the ring.
As we haven't been backstage, what actually happens? Do they actually introduce you? Do they say, like, coming to the ring now is Ben Bishop?
No, so they used to. When Dark first started and they didn't have as many matches, they actually used to have a graphic. So, like, somebody like Mr. Grimm, he had a graphic in a song, and he came out to when he had a match with Wardlow on Dark. And some of the earlier individuals on Dark, they had that. They kind of got away from it. Probably was taking a little bit too much time. It's a long, and I'll give you kind of an inside scoop that when I worked Dark, I was the first match of the night. I was supposed to be the sixth match, but there was a bunch of things going on. It was going crazy, and they were like, the production assistant, or I don't know his exact title, but he came up to me and was like, are you guys ready to go? And I'm like, Emma, you're asking me? You're asking me? Yeah, sure. I don't know. I looked at Bear Bryant. I was like, hey, are you good to go first? And he goes, oh, yeah, we're good. We can go. And so he's like, I just got to get – so, yeah, we jumped in first. And so I was the first match of the night. Actually, I got out there at 8 o'clock, and we were ready to start filming. And it started to rain in Jacksonville. So I was standing outside the ring waiting for about 20 minutes, and they go, hey, you can come to the back. And so I had to go to the back for another like 15. We got the good to go. I went back out. This part's not film. And then, you know, as soon as their music hits, that's when I know the filming starts. And I talked to the camera guy on the ground, really cool guy. He's actually a Maryland guy. So he was cool to talk to. He was kind of giving me the cues of like, hey, this is when this will happen, you know, and that this is when you post the camera. I'll turn to you. You'll see it. And so, yeah, they just give you the kind of, you know, Justin Roberts introduces whoever the person is, you know, coming to the ring accompanied by Bear Boulder, Bear Bronson, and his opponent, you know, Big Trouble with Ben Bishop. So, you know, kind of already in the ring. You don't get an entrance as no. somebody extra dark. but yeah, no, it was cool. Bryce Remsburg was the ref for our match. I think when people ask me what's the biggest difference between independence and WWE, AEW, whatever it may be, it's the reffing. The refs are almost just as much as part of the match as the wrestlers. And it's almost comforting to have those type of refs because they do talk to you through the match, and you know, you get to, they tell you your cues, your time cues, all that stuff. So it is really, it was definitely, you know, nerve wracking at first, getting in the ring and being like, oh shit, look at this. Here we are, you know, seeing the big AEW logo in the middle of the ring. But you know, once the match started, once the bell rung, I knew I was in there with a pro. And you know, I was confident as soon as kind of we got going.
Uh-huh. Now I was listening to a podcast from my good friends in England, the Cheap Pops and Chair Shots. And they were talking about AEW, and they were talking about AEW Dark and AEW Dynamite specifically today. And they claim that AEW is bad for the indies. They're claiming that those matches actually just show squash matches. It doesn't do anything for the smaller wrestler, so it being coming up, etc., etc. Now, to me, I didn't buy that story straight away, because my side of it is it's like, oh, you just promoted somebody who people might not be aware of, and then you want to see him. Now, from your experience then, can you tell us, because I think they're wrong, and I'd love getting one over and telling them how they're totally wrong. Can you tell them why they're totally wrong on this?
Yes. I'll start off by saying I understand what they're saying. I see what they're saying. And, you know, if a guy goes there and he's squashed in 20 seconds, you know, does that hurt his chance? Is he a champion? You know, is he a champion at whatever it may be, in his hometown, at some Fed? And the thing is that you can tell them that. So you can say, like, hey, you know, I don't want to be squashed. They're very receptive. They're extremely receptive there. So if somebody's working a match with, say, with like Will Hobbs, or Wardlow, you know, you kind of have an idea, or Lance Archer, you kind of have an idea of what that match is going to be, especially if you're not a bigger guy, you kind of get like, oh, I know what this will be. But you know, QT has said this before, you know, if you have an issue with something like that, let them know, and they'll, you know, put you in a tag match, or it'll be a little bit different. They'll figure something out where, you know, they can not have you, you know, look, what do you want to be called, bad. In my opinion, I think everybody should be professional and do what's being asked. It is a privilege to be there, not a right. But I'm not going to speak on anybody, you know, if they don't want that to be their persona. I think every match should make sense. I don't think I should, you know, somebody at my size should go in there and lose to Fuego del Sol in 30 seconds. You know, I don't think that should be the case, you know. But if that's what's asked of me, you know, I'm not going to, you know, cry about it. You know, like I said, it's a privilege. It's not a right to be there. So I wouldn't say it kills the indies. I think it gets more of an eye on certain people that people haven't seen. You know, a lot of people haven't seen me outside the Mid-Atlantic and Tennessee and those areas. So, you know, people get to know you a little bit. It's great for, you know, reaching out to other promotions and promoters and showing matches that are professionally done with a good camera, with commentary. And, you know, even if the match is only 3, 4, 5 minutes long, you know, it's something, you know, because a lot of promoters don't want to watch 20, 25-minute matches when you're sending it to them. They want to see the 5, 6-minute matches, or a condensed match, and so you can get all, you can show them all your stuff. So it's great for that. And obviously, you know, they have their guys, and they're going to put their guys over, and as they should, as they 100% should. When I was there, it was also the first time Wheeler Yuta was there. So a little anecdote here. And I didn't know, no one really knew he was going to get signed or not. And I actually really popped when I was watching his match with Ryan Nemeth, and I was just kind of sitting there, because the whole day, it was kind of me, him, and PB Smooth, who were there for the first time. So we had to go find where to take pictures, which was on the other end. So it was a very hot day in Jacksonville, and we had to walk all the way around the arena to get to the part where they took pictures. We were looking for it for about an hour. So we're walking around with us three trying to find all that stuff out. So we got to know each other a little bit and started talking. And Wheeler Yuta, a great guy. And he, when he beat Ryan Nemeth, I legitimately popped, and I was like, "Whoa!" I didn't know it was coming. I was like, so surprised. I was so happy for him. And then, you know, a few days later, we find out that he got signed. Guy's an amazing wrestler. Obviously, you guys know who he is, and I'm really, really happy and great dude. And but yeah, that was cool. You know, seeing I didn't see it coming. You know, he rolled him up, got the pin, and I was like, "Whoa, no way!" Because that was cool. Because we had to sit through, like I said, I was the first match of 38 matches. So it was a long night. We were there for a long time.
I think Wheeler Yuta was at the second indie event we ever went to. It was his debut at Nova Pro Wrestling. So yeah, we got to see him there. We got to see him win the Commonwealth Cup. I think it was there as well. And I actually got to see him defend his IWTV independent title this summer as well in August. So yeah, okay. Wheeler Yuta, excellent wrestler. We really like him. Yes. Now, you obviously mentioned some of the other benefits as well earlier, the fact that you get to talk to people like Bear Bronson, who is at that next level up now. You get to talk to Billy Gunn, who's one of the obviously top people at AEW as well. So that's obviously other benefits. Now, I also saw you tweet, and sometimes it's not easy to tell on social media, is this actually Ben talking or is this character Ben talking? Now, I think people were asking, or other people were making their lists of, who are the top 10 wrestlers you want to fight in 2022 or something? And basically your response to this was, I'm not interested in that. I'm only interested in the money that goes with it. Now, the angle I want to take with this then is, having appeared on AEW, is that something now that's helped you to get more bookings? Is that now that something where if they want to put you on the poster, they can say, as appeared on AEW, Ben Bishop? Is that something that's helped you in the last 6 months since that's happened?
It's absolutely been a positive. It has helped. It's gotten more, you know, traction on social media, more followers. And it's helped a good amount with other promotions and getting the word out there. Obviously, a lot of people have done AEW Dark now, so there's been a ton of people who have done it. So I'm not going to say it's not special. It is 100% special. But there are a lot of independent wrestlers out there who have appeared on it. So you're going to find other ways to stand out. And regarding the list comment, so I will speak on that. One of my biggest pet peeves in independent wrestling. So what you saw is about 50-50, right? So it's the real me as well as the character me. And I wouldn't say it as bluntly if I was talking sincerely about it. But I don't believe in the list thing. I don't, because you don't, I want wrestling to be as legit as possible. I want it to come off as legit as possible. So especially on social media, I'm not going to be the one to run to social media and, you know, do the brother thing and say like, oh, what an amazing person match this was. And I can't wait to have another match with you again. And especially if there's a heel and a baby face, why is that being said? I think somebody who's one of the best on social media is Darius Carter. I think he stays true to his heel persona. When I'm speaking on the indies, you know, he stays true to his heel persona and he doesn't pander to people as he shouldn't, as a true heel. And you don't see, to make a similarity between, you don't see UFC fighters, you don't see MMA combat fighters, you don't see them saying, this is my wish list for the next year. I can't wait to get in the octagon with so and so. You don't see that. Yeah, they say, I want the champion because I want to make money, I want the power. That's what they want. So they'll say give me Conor McGregor because I know that I can beat him. They're not saying I can't wait to have a great fight with Conor McGregor. It's like, no, I want to beat him in 10 seconds if I can beat him in 10 seconds. I don't have a great fight. I want to beat him so I can get the belt and I can win the money and, you know, I can continue living my life. I feel the same way. I don't want to make a list. I don't want to make lists. I don't care. I want to wrestle people. I want to continue to get better at it. But I want to be, you know, I'm a big guy. I want to be an imposing, you know, figure. I don't just want to be one of the boys. I want to be the guy. So that's why I'm not inclined to do the list thing. And you know, if people want to do it, go right ahead. You know, be my guest. But it's not my cup of tea.
Now, I don't know if you know the answer to this one. This is something I've been curious about for a long time, and I've never asked anybody, but today is the day I'm going to ask it. So all while right. we're looking through those matches, like if you look through the AEW match in July, you can see it's Bear Bronson versus Ben Bishop. Now, if I click on Bear Bronson, it shows me all his matches. If I try and click on Ben Bishop, I don't get anything. How do you get to appear on Cage Match? Is there a process that you have to go through?
I've looked into it, and I don't know. I don't know how it works. And I tell everyone, like, Cage Match is pretty arbitrary because they don't get everybody's matches. So you can't say, like, oh, wow, Ben Bishop's only had one match in his career. Like, that's not, you know, Cage Match. It's not accurate. There's not somebody at every event, you know, reporting a Cage Match. Yeah, they do the bigger names, and I get that. The bigger indie names, the bigger signed names. I don't know. I really have no idea. I don't know how it works. I've tried to look into it. See, like, can I make my own profile and then add stuff in? Yeah, I can't. You can't. There's like a moderator. So it's not too big of a deal for me. I mean, hey, if that's.
I'm not going to mention any names. We've definitely interviewed people who are probably on a lower standing than you who do have some of those pages. So it was kind of, I wondered if it was something that you had to initiate yourself, or if, from a terms and point of. Researching, it's always good when you can click on a name and you can go, oh, look, there's this match here, or that looks interesting, and you can find like a list of organizations, and then you it's kind of like a starting point.
I try to do that on YouTube and try to make playlists of my matches so that if anybody's going to YouTube, they can see them. But yeah, Cage Match, I really don't know how it works. No idea.
All right, I did wonder. I had that feeling that it's probably one of those
unknown. I want to know how it works too.
All right, if you're listening to this, go ahead. Make sure you reply to the comments and make sure you tag Ben as well, and then we'll find out how all this stuff works.
I saw you attended a WWE tryout. Can you tell us about that experience?
Yeah. So. I tried out with WWE almost a year to this day, actually. It was beginning of February 2021. And I actually got the email. This won't come out on the day we're recording, but the day we're recording, I got the email that I was going to be invited. So I was really excited. It was a lot because, you know, you had to do blood work, you had to have a physical, you had to get a bunch of stuff done in a matter of like 2 weeks. So, you know, I was running around a ton trying to get all that stuff. But when I got down there, they fly you down there. They put you up in a hotel for a few days. You know, they get you a rental car so you can get to and from the performance center. Because I was there, obviously, during, you know, when COVID was pretty high. So they were having smaller tryouts, only with about 12 to 15 people. So, you know, I'll kind of run you through how it went. So, you know, we get there, we actually have to get up really early at 5 a.m. and go get a COVID test. So we had to go get a COVID test, and then we had to just sit and wait. Really, you could have went back to the hotel. I just kind of sat in a parking lot for about 2.5 hours waiting for the results of the COVID test. And obviously, you know, it was good. We're supposed to be 12 of us. I believe one person didn't show up. One person didn't come. One person did not pass the COVID test. And then one person actually, they asked, hey, did you travel within the last 14 days? And the person's like, yeah, I actually just got back from Australia yesterday. And they were like, you did what? Like, you got to get out of here. You got to go. So now we're down to 9. There's 9 of us. And to start the trial, and we're all sitting in a room, and there's you had to do another physical, get checked by the doctor, get the okay, sign a bunch of stuff. So we're kind of sitting there getting to know each other. I was there with a few indie guys from around the East Coast, named Milk Chocolate. So Brandon Watts, Randy Summers were there with me, Travis Titan, who is a Seth Rollins student. Jake Oman out of Indianapolis, who's been around for a long time. So I was down there with a few indie guys. Nick Stanley, actually, is Jamie Stanley now in AWA, NWA. And so it was really cool to get to meet everybody. Everybody was awesome. There was a few other people there that weren't indie wrestlers. They were just athletes. So there was 9 of us. So we go in to the performance center. Now, we weren't in the exact actual performance center. We were actually in their... Because they turned the performance center into where they film NXT. So we were actually like warehouse with two rings. There's two rings in it. So the two rings on a little area to warm up. So William Regal's there. Finley's there. Norman Smiley, Robbie Brookside, and a couple other coach. Oh, a few Raquel Gonzalez, a few NXT NXT talent were there to help out as well. We start the warm up, and it's really only squats, push ups, sit ups, and what I call set goes, where you start on your back and you got to get up on your feet. Within 10 minutes, one of the athletes, he was a lineman from Wake Forest, said, "Thanks, but no thanks, I'm out of here." He's like, "I didn't want to do, I don't, this is too much." So this was just the warm up. So he leaves. now we're down to eight in a tryout that was supposed to be ready for 12 people. And they didn't say like, "Oh, we're going to cut back on some things." We did the whole tryout. So we start going, we get in the ring and we start doing rolls. And how it goes is that you know, you do your thing in one ring, you get out and get to the other ring, you do the same thing. Then you run back around to the first ring and you keep going. Now that's usually with 30, 40 people. We had eight. So it's almost like a sprint, and we're just like, you know, nonstop going. I'm one of the biggest guys there. There was another guy there who was a rugby player. He's about 6'5", probably like 250, big guy, in good shape. Within 45 minutes, he was done. So he said, "No more. I'm good." Like, I didn't know this is what it was. So he leaves. So now we're down to seven, and it's the six independent wrestlers, and then one individual named Gavin, and he was a kickboxer. So he had a kickboxing background. So we basically, the first session was the longest session out of the four sessions in the 2 days, and it was cardio intensive. It was very, very difficult. It was nonstop. They blew us up. There was nothing really in the realm of like working matches at this point in the first session. We were just doing drills and drills and drills and nonstop drills, and very, very, very exhausting first day. We broke for lunch, had lunch for about an hour and a half, and came back. Obviously, when you're that tired, you don't even want to eat. You don't want to think about you're gonna puke. And come back, second session's a little shorter. It's about an hour and a half in the ring. So now we're doing again. We're going, you know, right back at it. Do the warm-up again, everything. So we go back at it. And then we had an hour of strength and conditioning. Like, we haven't already been doing conditioning all day. We go back. We meet with their strength coach. Cool guy. Really, really cool to go into the actual performance center and go in their weight room. So we did that. And then, you know, it's okay. See you guys tomorrow morning. Very sore, very tired, you know, limping back to the car because it was a doozy of a day. The next day, they said, you know, come in your best attire, come dressed up, because we were going to do some promos. Steve Corino was here that day. We each did a minute promo. They gave us pointers. It was very awesome because they were like, "Hey, you know, we can't, because there's only seven of you, we can actually like spend time to talk about how each promo went and why we're giving you these pointers and why this makes sense and why we say this." So then we did that. Then the six of us that had experience wrestling had a match. So we had to put together a match, had a WWE NXT ref there with us as well, walking through our matches with us and telling us like, "Yeah, don't do that. Oh yeah, that's a good idea. No, they're not going to like that. Don't do that." So it was good to have that. So we each had about a 5 to 6 minute match. I wore Travis Titan. So that was cool. Then we broke again for lunch and we had the last session of the day. So our last session of the tryout. And again, it was just nonstop, hour and a half, 2 hours of nonstop cardio. And you know, it went well, you know, towards, I got like about a half hour left. My body almost, my hamstring almost popped. It just got to the point where it was so tight. And I went to the doctor and he's like, "Yeah, you're about you're almost about like where your hamstring might have just tore at this point." He's like, "So we're just going to hold you out." So about like 30, 40 minutes left in the last session, I wasn't able to complete. So I was a little bummed about that. Unfortunately, no one from our tryout did get signed. It was a weird time because they were doing a lot of changes in NXT at that time, and things were kind of all up in the air, as you can see now. So it did end up happening. So you know, like certain individuals that were hiring people are no longer there. But all in all, you know, to end the long-winded story of that tryout. It was really cool. Meeting William Regal was awesome. What a wealth of knowledge that guy has, obviously. It's unfortunate that he's no longer with WWE, but if any company wants to hire him, that he could probably be the best addition of 2022 for any company out there. And it was a very, very, very worthwhile experience. As tiring and as exhausting as it was definitely worth. I got home. Those were days I took off from the gym. I didn't go to the gym for 4 days after that. So that was as long as I was like, nope, I'm shutting it down for about 4 days. I am not going. I was in a lot of pain. I was like, I'm laying in bed. I'm sleeping. I'm like, I'm not going to the gym. And I did that, and then I got back to it the next week.
This is why we do our separate research. I didn't know that. There was one question I was really interested in. That was the question. I did not know that. So, no, you said a long-winded story. No, for me, that's interesting. That's exactly, like, we see the pictures online, and that's pretty much all you see. You don't get to know all the stuff that goes in, how much detail, how much effort you have to put in. So that's interesting to me.
They recently did a tryout in December, and they were very open about that tryout, and they were posting a lot of pictures of that tryout with. But before that, I think they're doing more of that now, but it was pretty tight-lipped when I was there. They don't want you tweeting that you're there. They don't want you telling people. They don't mind if you tell people. They don't mind if you go on a podcast and say you had a tryout. They don't mind that, but they don't want you being there, like, taking pictures and saying, like, hey, I'm here for a WWE tryout. So they kind of tell you that when you're there. Okay.
The only other thing I did wonder is, because you talked about the promo side of it as well. Obviously, one of the bigger differences I've heard from the indies up into that next level is the filming side of it, like working to the hard cam. So, I mean, did they do anything to do with that at all?
Yeah, they definitely tell you when you're working your match and giving you an idea of, like, you know, here the camera's going to be here, so work that side. Ellsworth's been pretty instrumental with me, kind of giving me pointers on how to do that, how to work certain sides of match, how to get back to the hard cam if you ever kind of get away from it. I'm in a match at all, I always, no matter if there is a camera there or not, like, I don't know, people might be filming, I don't know, I try to, like, position myself to one side just to condition myself to working towards a hard cam. So I'll just kind of say, okay, this side's the hard cam, even if it's not. Like, I don't even know if there's a camera there. But I'll just try to, like, tell myself, okay, I want this to be on this side of the ring. And I'll work with – and whoever I'm working with, I'll make sure they know that, like, hey, this is going to be at this point, at this side, this post, this area, this side of the ring. We're going to work this way instead of this way. Just because I want to condition myself, because, you know, if I do end up getting to the next level where that's extremely important – that's something that I have to learn now and not make any bad habits.
Uh-huh. Now, I mentioned Invictus Pro recently because I saw one of your matches on there, and it wasn't an organization I was familiar with, and it's brilliant. I looked at that card, and I was like, oh, my gosh, this is amazing. And then I was like, oh, Bendership's there. I was like, this is awesome. So anyway, I watched it. I see upcoming. So after this releases, I think it's probably about the following weekend. January 29, Winter's Wrath. I'm going to read you the card because I don't think they've announced every match yet. Cage match has 5 matches listed so far.
I think I think every match is listed now on their website. Or I'll tell you the ones you missed. Go ahead and say the match.
Okay. I got Vicious Vicky versus Kaia McKenna. So obviously Kaia McKenna, I believe, is from Baltimore area. I think that's the same area that you are. Ken Broadway versus Gio Galvano.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ziggy High versus Little Mean Kathleen. Then your match, the semifinal of the tag team titles, the Meat Locker versus Mucho Trouble, and the Invictus social media title match, Big Game Leroy versus Alec Price. Now, like, every single name there is like, I love watching these people. I love Invictus Pro. I had a couple, if there are any matches I'm missing, you can certainly tell me. I got a couple of quick fire questions though for you as well. Because we've only ever seen you the places we've been. You've only ever been face. So the first surprise for me was when I started watching Invictus Pro, I was like, oh, this is a little bit, this is a mean Ben Bishop here. So do you prefer being heel or face? And do you prefer tag team wrestling or singles wrestling? Because that was the other big difference. I saw one of your tag team matches there.
Obviously, it's much different, as you know, working heel or working face. I do enjoy working heel a little bit. You know, being a heel with my character can come a little bit easier with the Big Trump Ben Bishop character. So I'd say slightly enjoy working heel more. Slightly. But it's not like, you know, I'm just a heel. I'd say that. And then tag team versus singles. I'm really fortunate that I've been able to do both early in my career. Obviously teaming with Michael Zamato at ACW and then at Invictus and GSW, getting to team with Mucho Chris Muljo, who is a Dudley Team 3D student. So got to learn a lot from him, and it's been great. But I probably, again, slightly prefer singles matches.
Michael McCall's on the heel character. I loved your heel character. I thought it was great. We're so used to seeing you face, and obviously we like you as a face character. But when I saw you as that heel character as well, I was like, oh, I like that. I really like that switch, and I wasn't expecting it either, which made it better. Now, me and him are pointing at each other right now because we've been arguing over this. When we started to put our notes together, I said, we don't discuss things. I said, I've got one thing that I want to ask. And then when he showed me his notes, he stole my question. And then he accused me of stealing his question. Now, I'm going to do the first two lines, and then I'm going to let you steal the question back if you want it, okay? So while I was looking through certain things, there's a lot of things that I was not looking at, and I was nodding my head like I'm 100% with Ben on this. Now, some of them, of course, it could be you being a hot take and being a heel character. I don't know. One of the things you mentioned was David Arquette winning the WCW title. Most wrestling fans normally hate that. That was one of the things when I first moved to the States. I actually liked it. I thought it was good. I thought it had added a totally different storyline, so I liked that one. I saw a tweet recently mentioning you were drinking hot tea. I knocked my hot tea over before I start as we were starting this interview, and that's probably even in the interview somewhere as Jackson was leaving. And also, I noticed that you do Wordle as well. I've just started about 4 or 5 days ago. I loved it. So there's a lot of things that we agree on. There is one thing that we massively disagreed on, and I wanted to talk about it. But go ahead, Mason. You go ahead and steal my question, even though you claim that it's yours, if you want to ask it.
Why do you think Die Hard is not a Christmas movie?
Okay, so, all right, we'll have this discussion then. So Die Hard is not a Christmas movie, and here's the reason. I mentioned this on Twitter, for a Christmas movie to be a Christmas movie, the plot of the movie needs to revolve around Christmas. So Santa Claus obviously revolves around Christmas. Jingle All the Way revolves around Christmas. Christmas Vacation revolves around Christmas. Christmas is a important plot point for that specific movie. That you can't explain the movie without explaining Christmas in a suitable way. You can very much easily explain Die Hard without mentioning that it's Christmas time. There's nothing about Die Hard, the plot of Die Hard, that really you need to know that, hey, by the way, they were at a Christmas party and it happened around Christmas. So that is why Die Hard is not a Christmas movie.
Okay. Why is John in the building, though? John's in his building because he's estranged from his wife. This is the chance that he gets to get back with his wife. He gets a chance to meet with the kids. The only time you could possibly do that. You're not doing that on a random Tuesday in March. You're not just suddenly meeting up. You're meeting up because it's the holidays time. And for that reason, that makes it has to be a Christmas movie. That's the only reason they get together, is because he's only in that position for the story to develop because it's a Christmas party. Like, it couldn't be an Easter party. That wouldn't make any sense. It can't be a Halloween party. That doesn't make any sense. It has to be a Christmas party.
How could it not, though? Maybe he wanted to see the kids on Halloween. It could have been a Halloween party. Maybe he wanted
He's
to come
home from New York to L.A.
Maybe he wants them to trick-or-treating. They were having an office Halloween party. That's perfect. That could be it. You know,
That's only one day. That's too far. Christmas is over a long period of time.
It could be one of their birthdays he could be there for.
Hey, you were supposed to be agreeing with me on this one. You were supposed to take the side on this one. Thanksgiving would work, actually. Thanksgiving
is the biggest debate whenever, you know, in the holiday season is around, is Die Hard a Christmas movie? But I will never be convinced otherwise. I'm usually pretty open to other opinions, but in this opinion, I will not. This was the year steadfast. I have stated my claim that Die Hard is absolutely not a Christmas movie.
Well, let me ask you another one, because my mother-in-law asked me this one. I wore a lot of Die Hard Christmas t-shirts this year. There was a sale on Teespring or whatever it was, and I bought lots of them. I love Die Hard. It's my favorite Christmas movie. And if it's not a Christmas movie, it's one of my top 10 all-time movies of all time. She asked me, is Edward Scissorhands a Christmas movie? And I was like, ooh, I'm not sure on that one. I don't remember that film, to be honest.
I haven't seen Edward Scissorhands in a while, but again, if what I remember correctly is that Edward Scissorhands, yeah, it might occur around Christmas. Uh-huh. I wouldn't call it a Christmas movie. Just because a movie revolves around or is it happens during the Christmas season doesn't always make it a Christmas movie. Because you can make a case for a lot of movies that happen during Christmas. That he's like, oh, is it a Christmas movie? And no, it just it happened to be Christmas.
Sure. Now, I don't remember the film either. My wife says at the end, though, part of obviously with his hands, that when he gets the blocks of ice, like he cuts them to make different shapes, yeah. But that sends all the ice into the air, and that's where we get snow from. So I guess that could just be a winter thing, not a Christmas thing, though, as well.
It could be a winter movie, yes, a winter movie.
Yeah. All right.
Which you can lump in with Christmas, but yeah.
I am completely neutral. I've never watched Die Hard, but...
You got to show him Die Hard.
I don't think it's rated PG-13.
Oh, Die Hard.
Perhaps
great.
Next year you can watch it then.
There you go. Next Christmas you can watch Die Hard.
Yippee-ki-yay. I think you'll like it.
The rest of it.
Would either of you change your viewpoints if the director or one of the main actors said that it was a Christmas movie or not a Christmas movie?
They actually said it's not. Christmas movie.
I'm under the impression that they probably all hate that question at this point.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if you're a Star Wars fan or not, but the funniest answer I've ever heard, you know, I think those cult type questions where people are like, you know, they're asking it's asked of the stars of the movie so much, which I'm sure Bruce Willis is asked if he thinks Die Hard's a Christmas movie more often than he wants to be asked that. My favorite answer to that was Harrison Ford when somebody asked, well, did Greedo shoot first? And his answer was just bluntly, I don't care. So he didn't care. And people always wanted to know who shot first, Han Solo or Greedo. And he's like, I don't really care. He's like, I was just playing Han Solo. This isn't my life. I don't care.
If I had to put one piece of evidence forward to try and make you believe that Die Hard was a Christmas movie, is the well-respected institution, the Smithsonian Museum, they had their Christmas, whatever it is, their list of Christmas films, they had their showcase or whatever, and Die Hard was part of it. That wasn't this year, it was the year before. So Christmas 2020, Die Hard was part of their...
2 years ago.
Well, just over
2022.
We're in January 2022. You're not gonna argue. Okay, I'll argue on many things. You can argue with a mass team on how long it was.
I have a feeling they were doing that to incite anger and try to get people to like start talking about it. So I think it was a publicity stunt more than it was accurate.
Good heel. Get some heel heat.
Yeah. That's it. That's what it's all about.
What's your favorite food combination?
I think we missed a word from this. Yeah. Weird food strange combinations. Yeah, we talked about eggs and peanut butter earlier, so we're kind of going full circle.
Eggs and peanut butter. I'll tell you, eggs on a cheese... I mean, no, I'm not egg. Peanut butter on a cheeseburger is really good, so I'll give that to Savage Gent. That's a good... That is a really good combination I found in college when you're just trying to find ways to like either get more protein or eat real quick. That's a good one. Favorite weird. My wife thinks that when I put ketchup on eggs, that's weird. I don't think that's weird. Oh,
we have another thing we agree on. I did that in England. That's I'd say that's kind of a big thing. When I first I went on a field trip in my first few months here with a bunch of kids, and there was breakfast, there was eggs, and I was like, "Is there any ketchup?" And the look that I got from people was, I was like, "Did I just say something wrong?" I had no idea that was considered such a faux pas. So,
Going to a prep school and living, I lived at Worcester Academy. So we ate in the dining hall, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You had to find ways to make certain things more flavorful. It wasn't always it wasn't the most flavorful food. So ketchup on stuff, ranch dressing on stuff, blue cheese dressing on stuff. My wife thinks she has a weird palate though, because she doesn't like. She does. These are the things she will not eat. She won't eat peanut butter. She won't eat caramel. She won't eat chocolate. She doesn't drink coffee. So she hates blue cheese as well. So those are some of the things she will. So anytime I put any of those things on anything, she thinks it's gross. So
We have tried the peanut butter on a burger. Bo Crockett, when we interviewed him, he mentioned he had it in a restaurant in Canada, and Jackson loves it. He, for about 6 months afterwards, every time the burgers came out, he was like, can I get the peanut butter? My wife would roll her eyes, but he ate it no problem. So, yeah, he's definitely an advocate of that one as well.
Who was your favorite teacher at school and why?
My favorite teacher in school? Oh, man, we're going back now. That's a great question. I don't think I could pick one. I had some really great teachers, and all of them that had, I'll give you the traits that these teachers had. That was the reason why I really liked them. Because I can't put my finger on one. I always really gravitated towards teachers who were always like empathetic teachers who had an understanding of what students either were going through I just kind of had their finger on the pulse of that current generation, weren't somebody that's stuck in their times and like, though this is what happened when I was a student or anything along those lines. And also teachers who were always willing to help and also wanted to, and I think obviously every teacher should always have a teacher-student relationship, and it shouldn't be a peer relationship by any means. And like, teacher shouldn't be your friend, but teachers that acted almost as a coach, like a coach relationship, and somebody that, you know, had students' best interest in mind, but also holding them to a certain standard and not just, you know, having it be a playground or a free for all in their classroom. So those were my favorite teachers. I couldn't say one in particular, but you know, those are the traits that I really held input that were important to me.
This episode will come out on January 24th. Are there any other events to promote that you are appearing at in the near future?
Yeah, so we already spoke about Invictus. That's a hell of a card. I personally think it's the best Invictus card right now. I mean, we already spoke about, you know, the best match on the card is obviously Mucho Trouble versus the Meat Locker. Long history with me and Wrecking Ball Ligursky. And I'm finally going to take him down and his tag partner, Adam Payne, on January 29th in Ridgefield Park, New Jersey. But also on that card, you know, it doesn't matter too much, but these are the other matches. Milk Chocolate versus American Murder Society. That will be the other semifinals match. Gio Gavano, Ken Broadway, spoke about that. Takeover versus Sin in an unsanctioned match. They recently won for Invictus Moment of the Year. So they, people are really looking forward to that match. It's going to probably be like no holds barred, pretty hardcore. So a different flavor at Invictus. I haven't had too many of those. So I'll be looking forward, peeking through the curtain, watching that match. Ziggy Heim versus Little Mean Kathleen. I've never been on shows with either. I've seen a little bit of each. So that'll be a pretty interesting girls match. Alec Price, Big Game Leroy for the Social Media Championship. Alec Price recently has been really making a big name for himself. Again, I'm not too familiar with Alec Price. I know he recently had a WWE tryout, though. I saw him in some of the pictures, and I think he sounds like a really, from what I've heard about him, sounds like a real special talent from up in New England as well. And a couple of ones I don't think you've mentioned, but Killian McMurphy versus Ally Catch.
Nice.
Yeah, so like an intergender match. Killian, I think, is such an entertaining wrestler. Obviously, he'll have Big Dust with him. Those two crack me up. So, and that should be a very intriguing match to watch as well. And the main event, Casey Navarro versus Alex Zane. So, Alex Zane obviously just coming from WWE. I'll probably just get tired watching that match. I'll be blown up and I'll have to take a sip of water. Because those two are going to go at it, and they're going to have that's going to be a fast-paced, really interesting match. I think Casey Navarro is really one of the special talents for his size and what he can do, and just how fast he is. He is a jet in that ring. And like I said, it's almost, I get blown up just watching a guy like him. And of course, Alex Zane, who is one of the most prolific, probably indie wrestlers, in the last 5 years, and, you know, had his stint with WWE for a bit. So that should be really interesting. It's a hell of a card. Is it on IWTV? I'm not entirely sure. Is it? Okay. So, you know, more
it
than
it should be. The last few definitely have. Unless something happened in the last month, then yes.
I hope it is. Is because I really think this is a special card, and I think that everybody I really do think that this can really put Invictus on the map of one of the premier East Coast, East Coast Indies. But yeah, no, so Invictus is coming up on January 29th, obviously Adrenaline Championship Wrestling. They have the event January 21st. I will not be there. I will be at AEW that day because that is AEW Rampage. So I was on the card. And unfortunately I need to, for good reasons, I will not be there. But February 4th, Hagerstown, ACW. Don't know who I'm facing off against yet, but looking forward to it. Love ACW, love the crowd, love the community that we've built with ACW. And after that, I'll be moving soon. So a lot of things are up in the air. February is a little bit open, but it's also going to be when me and my wife will be looking for places in Atlanta. So I'm trying to keep a few weekends open there. But obviously, whenever you're the way to find me, social media, I'm always posting about whatever event I'm on. At Big Trouble BB on Twitter and Instagram. So check that out. I'm always promoting events, which every indie wrestler should be doing, promos, should be promoting events, should be sharing posters, because I really want wrestling and indie wrestling to get back to, having 500, 600 people at shows. I love working in front of smaller crowds, in more intimate. It's great for, crowd work and all that stuff. But again, I really think professional wrestling is one of the greatest art form. I hate to say this, but it is one of the greatest art form and greatest spectacles that anybody could watch for what it takes. You need the athleticism, but you also need a personality, and you also need to know how to work a match and be safe. That's the most important. So I really think getting more people's eyes on it is something I hope happens. And we get back to those golden years of professional wrestling.
Could you tell us where we can find you on social media, and feel free to promote merch or anything else?
Were you listening to his answer? He just told you where to find you on social.
Nice.
I was thinking.
At Big Trouble BB on Instagram, on Twitter. I'm most active on those. Don't have a TikTok. Don't understand TikTok. Probably never will understand TikTok. So that's not there. I will not be on that. But Instagram, Twitter is where you can find me. I'm on Facebook as well, but I mostly use Twitter, mostly use Instagram. I do have merch. I just got new merch today. Actually, I will go get it. Oh, wait, no, this isn't a video. This isn't a video podcast. This is an audio podcast. But yes, I have merch. I don't have a pro wrestling tee store. I don't want a pro wrestling tee store unless I'm pushing big numbers of merch. But right now, I'm not at that level yet. I do it all myself. So anybody that wants merch, please DM me. Just got a new shipment of my new shirt. You can find it on my Instagram. The new hat, the new beanie with the palm on the top of it. A lot of people requested that. Real cool look, synthwave. You guys put the picture up when you have the podcast, you can show it. And my new shirt with my new saying, big man shit, with the I, with the apostrophe instead of the I. Because people always ask, hey, what do you do in the ring? What's your wrestling style? And I just say, I just do big man shit. So now it's on a t-shirt. And you can wear that t-shirt for the low, low price of $20.
And I was gonna get one for Mason, and then I saw that there was a follow-up tweet that said, no small, no medium, obviously, because it's big man. So, Mason, I think I saw there was a deal, though. If you get the shirt and the hat together, there's a combo. So I think what we'll do is, I'm gonna DM you later, I think we'll do a split. So I'll get the shirt, you can get the hat. How about that? Does that work?
The beanie's real sharp looking. It looks great. So you guys, I'm very happy with how it came out. I think it's one of my favorite pieces of merch, along with this. This was my other favorite piece of merch.
Yeah, that looks cool.
It is. Yeah, yeah.
I was completely thinking about how bad I feel for you because you have Lamar Jackson as a quarterback right now, and you're moving down to go to near Matt Ryan.
Well, just so you know, the Baltimore Ravens are not my favorite football team.
Oh,
what is your favorite football team?
Your dad knows where I'm from.
I didn't. That was one of the questions we were going to ask you.
I'm from Rhode Island. I'm from New England.
So I didn't know that. No. Yeah, because it says on your profile it's like Baltimore, but we were going to ask because I knew certain fans wouldn't know that. And with that connection with James Ellsworth, that kind of, to me, that kind of, oh, this obviously fit. Like, we know they'll introduce wrestlers as being from a certain place. And, yeah, of course, I forgot, because we talked about the Red Sox during World Series time. And
yeah.
All that time, and I said at the time, I was like, oh, I would love to ask Ben more questions about the Red Sox, and then I never even gave it a thought while I was putting this together. I totally forgot that you were a big Red Sox fan as well. That was another thing that was like, oh, I can tell this guy's good. He liked the Red Sox. So that whenever I see like a wrestler with a Yankees cap on, that's like, nah, I'm done with that.
Yeah, I'm a big Boston sports fan. I grew up in Rhode Island, spent most of my life in New England, so... yes, and I don't worry about Lamar Jackson, or I definitely not going to worry about Matt Ryan, who went to Boston College though, you know, so he has ties to New England. I'm good with Mac Jones. I'm excited for the future with Mac Jones, and we'll see how we do. We got the Bills, you know, hey, we can beat them. We'll see how it goes.
Is this the time where I mentioned that I'm a Dolphins fan, considering the game on the weekend? Would this be a good time to mention that?
I would be real mad at your organization for getting rid of Brian Flores, because I don't like that.
I don't understand. People are like, yeah, his record over 2 years is like this and this. I'm like, the guy's 8-1 in his last 9 games. I'm like, you can't, if you weren't happy with him
not a great
when
team.
He lost 7 in a row and you didn't fire him, but then he wins 8 of his last 9 games and then you choose to fire him. I have a huge problem with that personally.
I'll take him back with the Patriots any day of the week. I if he came back tomorrow, I'd be elated. He's a great defensive coach. And he'll get a job in within the next few weeks. I think he's probably top of the list right now for head coaches. I think it had to be something with differing ideas of where they wanted the team to go, and I'm sure it had something to do with that. And he didn't make some higher-ups happy with what he wanted, and they gave him the thanks but no thanks. Good luck on your future endeavors.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Ben, for appearing.
Yeah. No, this was awesome, guys. I really enjoyed it. Definitely one of my top podcasts that I've done. So, and I say that sincerely and genuinely. The questions were great. I mean, we went an hour and 30 minutes, and you know, it didn't feel that way.
We can only apologize. We used to say it's going to take between this long and this long, and then we stopped saying that because it depends on the wrestler themselves, how much they're prepared to share. And sometimes, like, we'll go off on attack. Like, I didn't know we were going to talk about football right at the end, and I found it's better just to be as spontaneous as possible.
I enjoy when podcasts are more conversational, and you know, I enjoy talking about wrestling. So I'll get going and I'll give long answers and I'll say my piece. So I always do enjoy that. And, I don't mind that it went this long. It was a great time. Great talking to you guys. And I'm really looking forward to seeing both of you at a show soon.
I'm hoping we can make that Hagerstown one. I'm hoping.
This is MGB and we're out. Peace.
Music was Zigzag by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. https://creativecommons.org/licenses/by/3.0/